Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society on this beautiful, beautiful morning. I can't wait for the weather this week. My name is Christina Clack, and I'm a member of Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm very happy to be here today as your presider. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation, and we welcome everyone, to make a long story short. Everyone is welcome here. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of programming, including from our minister, from people from the wider community, and from our own congregation. And today we're going to have a wonderful program put on by Millie and Mary, and I'll introduce them in a little bit more detail later on aging. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what they have to say. Our opening words today will be provided by Millie Moffitt.
For age is opportunity no less than youth itself, though in another dress. Evening twilight fades away. The sky is filled with stars, invisible by day. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
Our chalice lighting this morning will be provided by Faith and her granddaughter Isabella.
Life is a gift for what we are grateful.
We gather in community to celebrate the glories and the mysteries of this great gift.
Now I have the pleasure of introducing our speakers for today. I'm going to start with Millie. Millie Moffitt has a BA in Sociology and Education, an MA and an MA in Early Childhood Development. A move in her middle-aged years prompted her to look at her own aging when she returned to school at the University of Iowa, where she pursued an MA in Aging Studies. Following the completion of the aging program, she and a friend who was a gerontology nurse designed a program to provide consultation and implementation of services for the elderly who choose to live alone in their own homes. The business was sold when Millie retired. Mary Franz finished medical school in 1951 with two children by the time she graduated. Were you studying, Mary? She and her husband practiced together in Western Colorado for a few years, then moved to the Midwest so they could be part of a group. Mary practiced at the Monroe Clinic from 1956 until her retirement in 2010. She says she had a special interest in being a part of her parents' lives over the entire adult lifespan, and it was satisfying to grow old together. Of course, she had many younger patients too, even as she herself aged. Early on, she cared for children and even delivered babies, but that was a long while ago. Now that Mary is no longer in practice, she is still very interested in how we accommodate the aging process. Living in a very active retirement community, Mary has many opportunities to engage with her fellow residents, aged from their late 50s to over 100 years old. Please welcome, who's gonna speak first? Millie. Millie is going to speak first.
The gift of years. I chose this title for our presentation this morning from the same title of a very favorite book of mine by Joan Chittister. Joan is a Benedictine sister. She co-chairs the UN Global Peace Initiative of Women and is a strong advocate for disenfranchised, including prisoners. She is named as one of America's visionary spiritual voices. In The Gift of Years, Sister Joan offers a blessing at the close of each chapter that helps the reader embrace age and aging. I want to share one of these with you. A gift of these years is to give another whole meaning to what it means to be alive, to be ourselves, to be full of life. Our own life. And so now I'm going to introduce you to my own little story and how I feel it has influenced my later years when I entered graduate school to study aging. As a very young child, through my high school years, I grew up in a village called Strasburg in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. It begins in the 1930s, those Depression years. My father died, I was 5 years old, and so it was my mother, my sister of 11, and I moved to Strasburg to live with my maternal grandmother. This was a very difficult period, and my grandmother was not welcoming. Strasburg contained my extended family, 5 aunts and uncles and their spouses, many, many cousins, my paternal grandmother, and my father's brother. I was the youngest of all the grandchildren, my cousins being considerably older. My mother gave birth to me when she was 40. On one side of us lived a very elderly couple, on the other, an elderly cousin and her family, twice or three times removed. Across the street, an elderly Mennonite friend and her daughter. And so it was, I could go up and down our few streets in that little town, naming the elderly people. Strasburg, by the way, is a very historic community. My grandmother's house dated pre-Revolution, and she had served and had served as a hotel during that period. The sidewalks were largely of brick. And so I grew up with an aging family in a very old community. But I was loved and well cared for. However, my mother was forced to depend on the extended family for our support, and the family stepped forward and took care of us, especially during the period when she became gravely ill with tuberculosis, during which time she was in a sanatorium for 3 years. And during that period, I lived, as you might guess, with an aunt and uncle. When I recall, I had been assigned days for lunch during the school year at various other aunts and uncles' homes. So as a child, I recall feeling that I lived in a world of old people, and I was aware that my friends were younger or had parents who were younger than my parent. The early 80s came, our children were grown, my husband and I moved to Iowa City, Iowa, and as Christine has already told us, I returned to school to enter a graduate program at the university called Aging Studies. This program spanned the fields of gerontology and geriatrics. I think I felt comfortable in this because, after all, I had experienced so very much firsthand with my own family. I dedicated my thesis to my aunts. Wonderful women, all of them. But when I became so immersed in this program, I now wonder if I wasn't preparing for my own old age. Of course, much I've forgotten of those years, but what have I learned from these studies that continue to ring true for me today? There are a few things, not too really memorable. One thing I learned was that personalities don't change. If you're a curmudgeon today, you probably were when you were 20. Granted, many personality traits may surface or decline over our years, but basically, we continue to be who we were. I recall the classes I was required to take on death and dying. I learned about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and read her book of the same title. Today, her words still impart a lot of good advice and meaning. Years later, I learned from my own loved one how to die gracefully. That was a legacy that was left for me. On the lighter side, in the same class, death and dying, I was intrigued to learn that you could transport a deceased's body in your car to the funeral home as long as it was contained in a bag. And, as I recall, this idea was to save the cost of using an ambulance or the undertaker. Well, that Christmas, I bought 2 such bags, one for the discarded tree, of course, and the other, I told my husband where it was, would be for me if he should need it. I'm sure state laws have tightened a lot since then. That second yellow Christmas tree bag went with us through several more moves, reminding me of the class on death and dying. Well, I learned a lot about all kinds of senior living arrangements and care. The concept of continuity of care was just beginning. By that, I mean the communities that provide independent living, assisted living, and nursing care, all within the same complex. The kind of community where the Franzes and I live now, called Capitol Lakes. We students in that program were made aware of a gap, however. Continuing care and assisted living was only in its infancy, and many elderly people were isolated and living alone in difficult situations. And so, upon completion of my graduate work, I interested a geriatric nurse in joining me in a business venture of providing care for elderly who wanted to remain in their own homes, but who needed assistance. There was no such private care available in our county. Over a period of 6 months, we went through all the right channels to accomplish this. We hired an attorney, we met with professionals and the School of Business to develop plans and goals. My partner and I then met with families and clients to develop the plans of care and to determine needs. Actually, we ended up being consultants of that with our business, but we were fortunate to develop a relationship with the School of Nursing, which provided a primary source for our available help. Of course, we also used many individuals in the community. We had one major drawback. Many people who needed us could not afford us. This still rings a note of truth today. And many of our clients required some rather advanced nursing care, overseeing, and support. So today, I find that the way we are caring for our elderly is not that unlike how it was in the 80s. Although certainly the world of medicine has dictated how differently we treat the illnesses. We all know that we're living longer, there are more of us, and I'm told more and more of us are falling through the cracks. How can this possibly be? There is now an abundance of information available on services, programs, facilities for anyone in any situation, be they elderly, aging, or disabled. You can see some of this information on many of these resources in Dane County on the table at the rear. As a high school senior, I took a required course called Problems of Democracy, or POD. We were asked to write our final exam on the poor will be with you always. Today, I might consider asking students to write on the topic, the old will be with you always. What would our high school seniors do with this topic? Are they knowledgeable about the necessary care for our elderly? How to cover our escalating medical costs? How to address the ethical considerations? There are issues, these are issues, that did not seem to concern my elderly family members in Lancaster County in the 30s and 40s. My own aging seems to be taking the usual physical tolls, which have actually been a surprise over the years. I have recently walked to the Overture with a friend for the Forward Theater. I've gone to Albrecht this past week to help with 2- and 4-year-olds. But I want to mention that these things that I do, including some swimming and taking long walks with Mary, I enjoy them greatly, but they are for a limited few. I count myself highly privileged. I'm not mentioning all these things to say, look at me. Rather, when you're elderly, regardless of your circumstance, I've learned it's important to have something every day to look forward to enjoy, to keep yourself involved, interested, and interesting. And if you know some elderly person living alone and without social supports, you might help them uncover what that something might be. To close my part of our presentation, I want to read these lines by Joan Chittister, The Gift of Years. A blessing of these years is that we can, if we will, make them something glorious, a kind of shooting star across the sky of the human race.
I didn't hear all Millie's speech before. I'm just feeling so inspired by her last paragraph especially. So I'm going to talk a little bit from my experience as getting to be a very old lady myself, and also being surrounded by old people and having been a physician, caring for people through their whole span of life. Just what is better with years? Well, that's the first question. With the gradual ascent to becoming the oldest generation in the family, my father used to say in his 80s, well, consider the alternative. This is perhaps another way to say that you need to play the hand you were dealt, and if you were not dealt an early death, this is what happens. There are some changing realities, however, as the years pass. Your excellent eyesight may become only pretty good and then just barely okay, and you hope it doesn't deteriorate to total loss of vision. Your hearing may or may not deteriorate, but even if the hearing remains good, the discrimination of speech is less sharp, and you will often say, would you please repeat that? The ability to run up one or several flights of stairs may now involve a slower pace or even resort to the elevator. That confident, brisk walk may become a little more hesitant, the erect posture a little more stooped, or you could have a life-changing fall and a hip fracture. The ironclad digestive system may become a little fussier, and the bladder may betray you by inappropriate over-eagerness to empty. Well, I could go on and on. I could continue this litany, but you get the general drift. May Sarton is one of my favorite poets, and I think most people who've read her verse feel that way, especially as you get older. I'm going to read you one little poem. She wrote a collection called Coming into 80 a few years after she had suffered a stroke, and a patient of mine sent me this poem. Whoops, I didn't find it. Friend or enemy? I can look at my body as an old friend who needs my help, or an enemy who frustrates me in every way with its frailty and inability to cope. Old friend, I shall try to be of comfort to you to the end. I love this poem and this thought. Mae Sarton's attitude is ruefully realistic. The fact that she continued to live her life to the fullest after her stroke is a rewarding example of how attitude matters more than disability. I myself have been very fortunate in my genetic inheritance. My forebears generally enjoyed good lives and good health to the end. I also had the good fortune to be born into a family that had the means to nurture us well, give us a good education, and most importantly, they believed that their only daughter deserved the same benefits as her two brothers. So I've been able to follow the healthy lifestyle, partly because of those good examples, not to mention my very fortunate marriage, which I won't talk about anymore. I've been able to control my weight, but still enjoy my food. I think one or two glasses of wine is enough on most occasions, and don't miss the opportunity I might have had in my youth to overindulge. And I have a love for and a dedication to exercise and fitness. About smoking, I was, however, a slow learner. In college, it took me many months to learn how to tolerate smoking cigarettes, and I finally succeeded. Later on, during each pregnancy, I knew it was best for the baby to quit smoking, so I quit smoking. But as soon as the baby was born, I resumed smoking. After the fourth pregnancy, I finally realized I didn't have to go back to smoking. It was okay. So I smoked a few cigarettes a day for about 10 years. But even more important than these lifestyle issues is being surrounded by the various communities of friends, co-workers, relatives, all my various circles of association. I have had the warmth of being among fellow human beings, and I think this is a very essential part of living at any age, but especially with aging. It's very easy for aging people to become lonely. It's too much work to go out. It's just easier to stay home than to shrink into themselves. However, I'm very blessed to be living in such a wonderful community as Capitol Lakes, and I'm only a week before my 92nd birthday and feel blessed with good health. However, I am not immune to all those above-mentioned declines, and I realize that the gift of years may still hold some unwelcome surprises. So, here we are, all in the same leaky boat if we live long enough. How should we live? Should we kick and scream at fate as disabilities occur, or curl up in passive self-pity? Or deny the whole reality and sign up on a totally inappropriate expedition to outer space? There is a middle route. It's okay to challenge oneself at any age, but within reason, and not to jeopardize the safety of the people around you, let alone your own. We can't do much to change the course of gradual decline, but we can exert some control over our response. For example, most people are happy to get glasses or cataract surgery to improve their vision. But I would warn you that if you have cataract surgery, you will suddenly develop a lot of wrinkles that you didn't know were there. Not quite so many people are comfortable about getting a hearing aid. It's more work. It's not the same as your own hearing, the way glasses are almost the same as your own vision. But lacking hearing aids, people miss out on that essential vitamin of companionship. Other people, proud of their earlier athletic competence, will have difficulty accepting the use of a cane or a walker or whatever is needed to permit safe mobility. At Capitol Lakes, I've met some wonderful people. One is a woman who'd had 3 successful cancer surgeries before I even met her. But the most recent one left her with a bowel dysfunction that limits her diet severely, complicates even the shortest trip from her own home, and keeps her constantly vigilant. Nevertheless, she is a model of graceful acceptance. She enjoys life and her family and friends, and only occasionally gives in to self-pity. Why can't I have it all? The really special thing about this lovely lady is that she can laugh at herself as she acknowledges these brief despairs. Another young woman, younger than me, formerly bustled about Capitol Lakes at high speed most of the time, suddenly she began having dizzy spells and would freeze in place if she traveled across the large room there. Instead of deciding to spend the rest of her life sitting down, she got a walker, and now with a walker, she walks faster than most anybody at Capitol Lakes. My centenarian friend is a special treat. She has limited vision, and her hearing is somewhat limited, but she does well in small one-on-one conversations. She follows the beloved sports teams. She's a real sports addict. She uses the radio, but then she turns the TV on so she can see what's happening on the court, but she relies on the radio to tell her what's going on. When I asked her why she didn't have a hearing aid, the first place she does hear adequately if somebody's right with her, she said, "I'm Swiss and I'm 102 years old and I don't think it would pay off the investment." She's from the little town of Monticello between where we lived in Monroe and Madison. I could discuss many of my aging and happy friends, but in fact, among really old people, it's hard to find one who doesn't describe him or herself as happy. This is amazing, isn't it? A recent article in the Atlantic Monthly spoke of the U-shaped happiness curve. with youthful enthusiasm giving way to feelings of low-level dissatisfaction and mild depression in middle age, only to restore the more contented outlook as we weather through the 50s. Pathological depression, of course, can occur at any age, but that too can be treated. And it's much less commonly than in the earlier years. So what is the doctor's role in all this? What did I do? Well, not much, really. Medicine is limited in its miracle-working ability. We can't turn back the clock. We can't make people 30 years old, 20 years old, 40 years old, 50 years old. They're going to be whatever age they are. There are worthwhile interventions besides good visual and hearing aids. Artificial joints come to mind, and life-saving surgery or chemotherapy for many cancers. But the problem is how to know or to decide if an intervention is possible or advisable. Just because it's possible does not mean it's a good idea. Over my years of practice, unfortunately, there's been a diminution of the essential role of the primary care physician, or primary care provider, I should say, because in many situations, nurses and physician assistants are filling that role admirably. I believe the demand is there, but the supply is not keeping up. More doctors enter increasingly specialized fields of practice, and the third parties who pay the bills tend to discount the value of the talking time, which is the primary caregiver's chief contribution. What is usually needed, at any age, but especially in advanced age, is a realistic discussion of the benefits and the burdens of possible elaborate interventions. So what is chosen is appropriate to the age, the life goals, and the physical, mental condition of the individual involved. So I would urge anyone to seek until you find that relationship, whether it's with an MD, a nurse, PA, and once you find one, hang in there. And hope my patients, even my 80-year-old patients, when I was 87, oh, I didn't think you'd retire. And the last point I'd make is one that Millie also made. Financial security certainly is important, and society certainly has a responsibility to make good medical care and good living situations possible for everyone. It is shameful that in the richest country of the world, this kind of life and these solutions are not possible for everyone. But that really is another subject, a very important one. My own observation is a platitude. Happiness is not proportional to wealth beyond a certain minimum living standard, and that the people surrounding us as we age are the vital ingredient.
I do want to remind you of the literature that is on the back table, and you're welcome to take any of it. It is from the Dane County Aging and Disability Agency. A burden of these years is the temptation to cling to the times and things behind us rather than move to the liberating moments ahead. A blessing of these years is the invitation to go light-footed into the here and now, because we spend far too much of life preparing for the future rather than enjoying the present. Joan Chittister, The Gift of Years.
We now extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Please greet your neighbor and stay for a little socialization and coffee, and thank you for coming today.